Back to My Garden, Episode 2.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
This episode of Back to My Garden, brought to you by CoffeeRoyalty.com. Is it really possible to lose 5, 10, even 20 pounds or more just by switching your coffee or tea? Check it out at www.coffeeroyalty.com. What's the hottest trend in gardening worldwide? The hottest trend right now is fish-powered gardens. If you've ever been fascinated by aquaponics, check it out at backtomygarden.com/fish. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm David Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden today. So excited. We have a lady who is an author, a designer, a magazine visionary. She's a book writer, and she knows a thing or two about gardening. She lives in Harvard, Massachusetts, and I want to welcome to the show the visionary behind Pith and Vigor, the Studio G blog. We'll talk about all her properties in a second. Please welcome Rochelle Greer. Rochelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question. Are you ready to dig in?
I am.
All right. There is so much to cover today, but I want to introduce you to our listeners. Can you just take a minute and share with everybody a little bit about yourself, the driving force behind a gardening magazine? But let's go back for our listeners. How did you discover gardening?
My parents were gardeners, and their parents were farmers and ranchers. So since I was a kid, I mean, we grew our own vegetables. You know, we had meat and things that came from my grandparents' ranch and farm communities. And it's just kind of something that, as far as like growing food, has always just been something that I never really knew anything different. As far as gardening for, you know, kind of more aesthetic reasons, again, my mom, she was, you know, president of her garden club when I was a kid, and you know, my parents are still very enthusiastic gardeners. In fact, they're just dipping their toe into hydroponics, which I think is so cool. My dad's an engineer, and he's rigging up all these like systems in their house. Very fun to watch them play around with it. So,
I just picture your poor mom with gadgets all over the house with his projects.
It's not that bad. He actually builds stuff she wants.
Fantastic. So you grew up gardening. Did you find the transition into adulthood into gardening seamless? Or, you know, I was resistant to it because I was forced to work in the garden as a kid.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, because I have my own kids, and they seem fairly resistant to helping me in the garden now. But I didn't really do much gardening or anything when I was like in college or anything like that. But it was really when I bought our first house, it just, I don't know, it's like the mothering instinct or something. It just kicked in, and all of a sudden I was, you know, building, raised beds and all of it. And, you know, my husband, I would say he's one of my challenges with gardening, because when we met, he owned a house and I didn't. I lived in an apartment, and he wanted nothing more than to get rid of the house because he didn't want to have to deal with the garden. And so when we were married and we bought a new house, you know, his primary goal was to have no yard work. He didn't want any yard work. And, you know, I saw it as something that, you know, I was looking forward to. So anyway, over time, he's come to appreciate a bit more. But we have this sort of difference of opinions. He loves what I make and grow and build and all of that. But he's not always... He's enthusiastic because he knows that often it'll turn out great, but you know, it's hard work, so he can kind of sometimes want to put that on the back burner and go do something more fun in his book. But anyway,
oh, I can totally relate. I was more on the eating side of the equation for the first 10 years.
And you were on the, say that again?
On Sorry. The eating side of the equation. I was very interested in eating what my wife prepared out of the garden.
Yeah. Yeah. He loves, you know, I started with some friends here in my town, a farmer's market, not to sell my own garden stuff, although my kids do, but really just to kind of support sort of a local eating and local growing sort of community. And I would say, you know, of all the things I've done related to gardens and gardening, my family is most proud of my involvement in the farmers market and getting that started. They adore that and adore going there and sitting there and being there. And, you know, kind of the whole scene of it is right up their alley. It's great fun.
You know, a lot of our listeners are novice gardeners, Rochelle, and they look at you as an experienced gardener, and it might be a little intimidating, but I want you to share, go back to your early days of gardening. What was the biggest obstacle that you had to overcome as you became a gardener?
I would say, well, there definitely was, as I mentioned already, my husband just not really wanting to be involved. But I, you know, when you're a kid and you know, you're doing stuff with your parents, it's not like you're the mastermind by any means. You're just, you know, kind of like the little helper and, you know, maybe you get the fun of like, you know, picking the big zucchini squash, but you don't necessarily have to like spread the mulch and pull the weeds and all of that. So, you know, kind of learning what goes on, you know, to get to that like prize thing at the end and doing all of that and making all those mistakes, you know, cause a lot of it is live and learn, was probably the biggest challenge. You know, and I still don't think I'm an expert really. I don't know that I ever will, to be honest. I think you just, you know, it's always an experiment as far as I'm concerned. Like, let's see if this works, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. That's part of the fun.
Would you be willing to share a humorous story of a catastrophic gardening mistake you've made?
Let's see, catastrophic. Well, I have an ongoing issue with a woodchuck. And I've actually, and I almost don't even want to this because I'm afraid by saying it, I might, you know, turn the tide against myself again. But I've tried everything, like everything. I've literally almost burnt down our barn trying to exterminate these woodchucks. And I have two families of them. I've finally gotten rid of one, but the other one still persists. But I have successfully locked him out of my garden. So that's because without doing that, I mean, he just annihilates everything. I mean, it's just gone. That said though, I got him out of the garden, but I have a bunny now that, yesterday I discovered how the bunny is getting in. There's a few holes in my chicken wire. I think the bunny actually chewed through my chicken wire. It's because they're literally like chewed holes, which I who knew that a bunny would chew through chicken wire, but there's actually three holes, that could only have come from an animal, working their way through. But anyway, yes, I'm currently reseeding my entire vegetable garden, except for the tomatoes and the potatoes and all of the nightshade stuff that bunnies don't seem to want to eat, because he's pretty much eaten everything else this year. So,
this is where I really got a sense for your writing talent, Rochelle, is on your blog. You discuss the warfare with the woodchuck.
Yeah.
And I want all the dear listeners, make sure you head over to studiogblog.com. That's www.studio, studiogblog.com. Read about the battle. You'll relate. Everybody has rodents in their garden of some description. And how long have you been writing that wonderful blog?
I think it's been about 6 years. I think, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How has your writing style about gardening changed in those 6 years?
Well, I think in general, I don't know if I've ever heard myself a writer, ever really. I helped write a couple books right after I finished design school, years ago, but it was kind of like this novelty to me. And I think when I first started blogging, I saw blogging as a lot of people saw it as a way to really connect with people. And I did too. But more than anything, I saw it as like a really fantastic organizational system where, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in any designer, whether it's an interior designer or architect or whatever, but, you know, as a landscape designer, companies just send you, or at least they used to, send you so much stuff, like catalogs and samples and just stuff. And I just found it overwhelming. And so I saw the blog in the beginning as a way to kind of get rid of some of the stuff by organizing and just like being like a website and telling myself really what this company was about and then filing it away, you know, in this nicely structured blog format. So, you know, in the beginning it was more like notes to myself. But then it sort of, really grew. A lot of readers and, you know, became kind of, you know, it's one of the bigger garden design sort of websites out there. So anyway, that sort of changed because I started talking to other people, I think, rather than myself so much. I still kind of love to like to write a lot of how-tos. I like to just kind of commiserate with people and sort of share things that excite me and that I think interesting. It's just more of a genuine sort of expression of, I find I write how I talk. And I actually struggle when I can't write how I talk to write any other way. So
lovely. You've got this wonderful blog that you've been building for 6 years. And now you have this incredible new project called Pith and Vigor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear about A, how did you come up with the brilliant name, and B, what is it like putting together a gardening newspaper and digital magazine?
Well, I have a little bit of experience, or a lot. A few years ago, I launched with a business partner a digital magazine that was extremely well received, called Leaf Magazine. And we published 5 issues of it over almost 2 years. And we had literally millions of readers. We were shocked how popular it became. But it was completely free, and we, you know, we made no money on it. We lost money. But it was amazing to me how kind of hungry people were for such a kind of nice magazine. That definitely fed into it. Because I think, anybody who's familiar with the garden media landscape is, you know, probably well aware that it's not a big landscape. There's not a lot out there, and there definitely isn't anything new out there. I kind of, as a designer, I'm always looking for kind of other new and interesting things in other industries. And I've seen a lot of magazines and periodicals that are really interesting, from Lucky Peach in the food, sort of realm to the edible publications, again, in the food realm, you know, local kind of, culture building, Simple Things, it's a UK magazine, and Modern Farmer, talking about agriculture. All of these are really very smart and very kind of different take on their subjects from kind of what would be the standard of those industries. And so I just kind of felt that, you know, in coming up with a new publication that maybe we need some new formats. So it's a newspaper, and there will, you know, the idea actually many versions of it across the country that are all completely localized with syndicated content across all of them, beautifully designed, full color, so they're not going to look like the newspaper that, you know, you might have gotten on Sunday morning or something. They'll be really design forward. And kind of telling stories rather than, you know, there'll be some how-to and projects and stuff, but the writing is going to be a lot more literary. We're looking for satire and humor and presenting things in kind of a different, more creative way, using a lot of illustration as well as beautiful photography, that kind of thing. So the name, though, the name is so cool. I have to tell you about the name. I finished my book last fall, and I started working on this shortly thereafter. I knew that I wanted to create a new newspaper after we shut down Leaf, but I needed to finish the book first. So I spent all of Christmas at my parents' house, and I was like just making lists and lists and lists of words, because we had this magazine called Leaf, and I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe it's sort of a similar sort of play on words like we had with that. And I had all these lists of words, and I wasn't falling in love with any singular word. And I suddenly started thinking, well, you know, maybe I could put like multiple words together. And I just started playing with these lists of cool gardeny related words. And I had the words pith and vigor on it, and I just sort of liked the way they sounded together. And I, you know, as the more I kind of listened to myself say it, the more I thought it sounded great. So I, because, you know, you got to check and make sure that, you know, that's not like something somebody else has. And there nobody was using it. And in fact, there were very few to it, except on these like word history websites where people who study the etymology of words, the history of words and phrases, thought that the term pith and vigor was the source of the saying piss and vinegar. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. I didn't even know it was a term. They were just two words that I put together. But here it was, the source of piss and vinegar. And the way they described their theories were that, you know, you've pith being the central core of a flowering stem, and that is what gives you, you know, vitality and vigor and you know, helps the plant to grow. And the idea is that the original term was meant to say that, you know, it was alluding to having vigor without the pith. And so it was kind of like having all this like life force and vitality without like the backbone. And it was kind of meant to mean, you know, like going forward without a fear of a failure kind of thing, like nothing can stop you. And I thought, okay, this is destiny. I meant to write this, like, that's such a great history to a term that I felt like I had just made up, but obviously didn't. And, you know, and it was from that this piss and vinegar sort of evolved. So I thought the story was wonderful, and I just kind of accidentally found it. So I felt like Tasha had to be a good omen.
I was telling my wife over breakfast this morning, I said, I'm interviewing the founder of Pith and Vigor magazine. And she looked at me and she said, that's a good name. And she's got an advertising background. And is the website, dear listener, write this down. www.pithandvigor.com. That's P as in Peter, ithandvigor. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. So if you're listening to this in your car, come on over to backtomygarden.com and find Rochelle's podcast page, and there'll be a link both to her blog and her magazine. And you mentioned your book. We have to talk about your book because I'm very excited about this. You have a book coming out in Amazon, correct?
Yes, it's being published by Timber Press. It'll be out somewhere around the third week of September this year.
And it's all about gardening?
It is. Basically, the idea behind it is kind of the way I have always tried to work as a designer. You know, when you go into somebody's home, to begin to get to know them and what they might want from a garden project when you're working as a gardener. One of the first things you do is you know, you set them up, you get a sense of, you know, well, what are they wearing and what does their house look like and, you know, what's their style? And, you know, you're trying to figure this out, like what they might like. And it's kind of an extension of that. Because honestly, I think that people can feel very overwhelmed by designing their garden, and they start to get really hung up on things like foundation plants and this and that. I kind of feel like, you know, approach it in a way that you might approach, you know, designing your kitchen or your living room or whatever, where you kind of have a look in mind, and you've seen pictures on Pinterest or wherever, and you like this part of that picture and that part of another picture, and you're bringing this together into your own, you know, style. That's a really good way to kind of step into designing a garden as well. And so the whole concept of the book is based around 23 different styles that I think are kind of current and modern, but they're all of them, or most of them, based on sort of styles we've always known, you know, like a cottage style or a Zen style garden, or, you know, all these different things. But all of them modern about them. And basically each chapter introduces that style and talks about, you know, maybe some of the history of what makes that style and how, you know, you might bring that into your own home. It has a lot of ideas for putting together the pieces, you know, whether it's furniture or cushions or light fixtures or whatever, to the plants that, like, maybe it's a tropical garden, and, you know, things about tropical gardens, they tend to have these really hot, bright, vibrant colors and big leaves. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to live in the tropics to grow plants that have that big leaf feeling and, you know, will feel quite tropical, even though, you know, maybe you're in Harvard, Massachusetts, you know? So anyway, it talks about that. And then it has this whole ongoing section at the end of each chapter that's just full of very practical advice for building a garden. So there's like things about, you know, using landscape timbers or choosing plants, you know, online shopping for plants or building stone walls and kind of the basics of, like, you know, with the stone wall, maybe you're not going to build it yourself, but, you know, you want to be able to at least talk to the guy who's going to build it for you in an intelligent way so you get what you want. Anyway, it's meant to be a great reference, particularly for people who, you know, maybe have never done it before, but an easy way to sort of step into gardening in a way that hopefully will help people create gardens that are really reflective of their own personal tastes and style.
Fantastic. Can't wait to read it. I want to shift gears on you, and I want to talk about you right now. What is your garden like today?
My garden's kind of on the big side. We live on top of a hill, and we have 6 acres, but I garden roughly probably close to 3 of them. And it's been 10 years since we bought this house, and I would say the first 5 or 6 were completely filled with removing kind of this just overgrown and a lot of dead pine trees. It was a kind of a forest, but not an old forest, just kind of, not a very pretty one either. But anyway, we did a lot of clearing, and that took years. And now it's, I would say it's more like, it's like a country garden. We have a big vegetable patch, but kind of lots of curving lines, and there's a barn that was here that we've incorporated. You know, for me, I'm always looking for big bushes that will fill a lot of space. And I like things that I can pick. I like to do a lot of flower arranging, and we have some classes every once in a while in the barn related to that. I like to have the opportunity to be able to just wander the garden for materials. it's just a big rambling country garden, basically.
Beautiful. And for those of you listening who are visual learners, head over to Rochelle's blog at studiogblog.com to see how extraordinary what 3 acres actually looks like. Rochelle, you got to imagine a lot of our listeners, they're container growers on their patio in their apartments.
Yep.
3 acres is like a city park. It's just extraordinary.
I write for Apartment Therapy, a column there called The Gardenist. And so I find it challenging sometimes. It's like, you know, more readers there are definitely, you know, container gardeners or have maybe smaller city plots. And so, yeah, I'm constantly putting myself back in those shoes. And I used to have a city garden once. It was little, but it was great. I put plants in it that were way too big for it. But it's what you do. They're so small when you buy them, but then they, you know, then they grow.
I understand completely. Our half hour is rapidly escaping us, and now is the time of the podcast when we play my favorite game called Five Quick Questions. Are you ready to play?
Sure.
All right. Rochelle, number one, what do you think stops most people from gardening?
I think people think it's too hard. Too hard to know what to do, but also too hard maybe physically. And I think the know what to get out there and sweat is slightly harder to overcome, but I look at it as exercise, so.
Wonderful. Number two, what is the best gardening advice you ever received?
I had an answer for this at some point, but now it's escaped me. The best gardening advice I've ever received, I think just to, you know, not take any of it too seriously is advice I've received, you know, many times over of just, you know, but I like to give it too, because I feel like, you know, especially when I'm going to somebody's house and if they have a garden, I find that my blog precedes me and people will say things like, oh, my garden's a mess. And, you know, and they're very stressed out. And I think, no judgment, like, just, it's okay, you know, gardens are wild and crazy things, so all the better, just don't stress, don't take it too seriously.
Wonderful, I love that answer. Number three, if you had just 2 websites to share with a beginner gardener, what would they be?
Well, I will say that I think Margaret Roach's Way to Garden is a fantastic website for just a lot of practical advice. I kind of visit there a lot myself. She's just great. I would be remiss to not say my own site, but I think honestly you need to find I think you need to look sort of beyond garden websites. And when you go about, you know, creating a garden, I think you need 2 things. You need the practical knowledge, but you need inspiration, whether that's from art or fashion or interiors or whatever. But I think, you know, having a good sense of what you like and what your style is, from wherever you might find that is probably a fantastic resource for, you know, making.
All right. Number 4. What's the best gardening book or resource you can suggest?
My favorite book that I've ever owned is the Royal Horticultural Society's Book of Plants, the A to Z. It is a monster. It's, you know, it's easily weighs 25 pounds. Personally, I like to just flip through it and discover new things. But I'm a bit of a plant nerd. So, I think that's fantastic. But, I would say, it's a book that I worked on, but if you're looking for basic kind of advice, the garden, it's Rosemary Alexander. It's very, very good at you figure out all the practicalities that you need to kind of think through if you're going to design your own garden.
Wonderful. And number five, what's the number one thing that you believe every gardener should try to grow next season?
So you sent me these questions ahead of time so I could think about this. And I have to say, I'm a big proponent of not growing what you can buy, like if it's vegetables particularly. Except for tomatoes. Tomatoes are just altogether awesome on their own. But I grow something different that you know, maybe nobody else is growing. It's so important to kind of maintain that diversity. And I think it's so easy to kind of fall into this trap of just, you know, picking up whatever at the garden center. And personally, I think the world of plants is so vastly interesting that I like to see people, you know, become specialists in one little thing, you know, whether it's peonies or some crazy vegetable or whatever, and grow a whole bunch of them and just kind of like be the go-to person in your neighborhood for that, and then just trade for everything else. I don't know what I would say my one thing is, because I like to grow a million things. So but I love people who kind of have that depth of knowledge about one thing. It's so interesting to me. So that's, find your thing, whatever it is.
That's a brilliant answer. I like that. Trade, become a specialist and trade for the rest.
Yeah.
Well, dear listeners, this is wrapping up another episode of Back to My Garden. Rochelle, you have been such a wonderful guest. I want to make sure everybody heads over to your blog at studiogblog.com. And I want them to watch for Pith and Vigor at pithandvigor.com. And, of course, your book coming out on Amazon. I want to say thank you so very, very much. And I want to give you the last word, okay?
Okay.
Can you share with the listeners one little piece of wisdom or just a nugget of encouragement on their gardening adventure?
I would say don't look at failure as something that's insurmountable. There isn't a single gardener out there who is successful all the time or even half the time. I mean, I feel like I'm a fairly experienced gardener and don't work a lot. So figuring out what it is that made it not work and figuring out how to make it work is part of the fun and the challenge. And if you see it that way, instead of looking at something not working as a failure and that, you know, oh, I'm not a good gardener, is the much better way to go about enjoying gardening.
Fantastic. Rochelle, thank you so very much. You've been so gracious with your time. I really enjoyed our interview together.
Thank you.